Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. The show is brought to you by Moda Fabrics. You can visit them and find all kinds of fun projects to do at the Moda Bake Shop. You know, when I learned to quilt, everything was taught by hand. That's just the way it was done. Even though we had sewing machines and I'd been sewing on a sewing machine, in order to learn to quilt, all the basic classes were by hand. And I am forever grateful that I learned to do that from hand piecing to hand quilting. And I am super excited to sort of be able to explore hand quilting with Karen Mosby. She does this and teaches it and runs a fantastic group on Facebook all about hand quilting. And so we're going to learn more from her. Thanks for being here, Karen.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm happy to be here.
You know, I think it's exciting that so many people love to still quilt by hand. I don't mean that like still like, you know, oh gosh, but it's relaxing and, you know, the machines are so easy, but hand quilting is totally different, isn't it?
It sure is. And I love hand quilting because it is relaxing.
Yeah. And the quilts actually feel different to me anyways. I mean, they have a totally different drape when they're hand quilted versus machine quilted. Do you notice that?
Oh, I certainly do. Yeah. I find that hand quilted quilts, they're puffier. You want to just hug them. I think that's the most fun part about them.
I totally agree. Tell me just real quick, what is your background in quilt making? You know, how long have you been quilting?
Well, I started quilting in around 1975 when I made a baby quilt for a good friend's daughter. I thought it would be easy to do when I was in college and didn't have a lot of money. And so I thought making a quilt would be pretty frugal. And little did I know how expensive quilting would be once you become addicted. But I quilted for a few years and taught myself, and then my husband and I moved right next door to Mary Schaefer, who was in the Quilters Hall of Fame, and so I learned a whole lot from her.
Oh, my goodness. What an experience. I mean, I bet you didn't eat. Was she famous when you moved in next to her?
Oh, yeah, she was, yeah. Particularly in the state of Michigan. She was a well-known person, and I was just blessed to have her live next door to me.
Oh, my gosh. What an opportunity. Lucky you. Lucky you.
Absolutely.
Now, you were a quilt maker, you know, obviously. What style quilts do you like to make?
Oh, I like all kinds of quilts, but I find myself more drawn to traditional quilts. I like to put a lot of hand quilting in them. So any quilt that has a lot of space in it for additional hand quilting, that's what I really love.
So those big open areas that you can go in right. And put that layer of design.
Exactly.
Oh, well, you know, you've been writing about quilt making for a while now. How did that start for you? Why did you start writing about it?
Well, I started writing about quilting back in the early 80s, and my first book was America's Pictorial Quilts, and I was looking for information on picture quilts, and I couldn't find anything, and so I figured somebody had to write it. So that was my first start into writing, and then when computers and blogging came along, I started blogging, and I found that there were so many quilters around the world that were still hand quilting, and so I started blogging about that, and I started the Celebrate Hand Quilting blog, which was a group blog with as many hand quilters I could find that liked to write, and that kind of took off, and then I started the Facebook group from that.
Oh, that is cool. That is very cool. I thought we would just spend a little bit of time going over some of the tools that make for better experience at hand quilting, because some people may have given it up for a while and they might want to go back to it. And I know the right tool for the job is so important. Can you just sort of talk through some of the points? You know, what is the starting item that you think is most important, like a good tool?
Oh, the starting item, I think, that everybody needs to have is a thimble. And I know a lot of quilters don't use thimbles, but if you're going to hand quilt, I really think you owe it to yourself to get a good thimble. And by good, I don't mean, you know, it has to be expensive, because there's a lot of inexpensive thimbles, I find, that are very comfortable. But you really should get used to using a thimble. So I think a thimble is the primary tool that a hand quilter needs. Needles are very important.
Yeah. So they're so much tinier for hand quilting. For a lot of people, use a small needle.
Well, they are, because you have the three layers. You have the quilt top, the backing, and then you have the batting in there. So you need a strong enough needle, and I find that the shorter needles are better for that, because they don't tend to bend as much. I prefer a Bowen Sharp needle, a size 10 or 11, because of, you know, the lack of bending. John James also makes a good needle. So those are the two that I go to.
Are there variety packs? I mean, I know that you actually have a store that people can come to and find these. Do you sell, like, little variety packs so they can try a couple different ones?
I do. The shop is handquiltingsupplies.com, and we've got a whole lot of different kinds of needles there. We've got big stitch needle packs that Pepper Corey put out. And those are fabulous if you're into the big stitch with the pearl cotton. And just a whole lot of different kinds of needles that are really good to try.
Awesome.
As far as batting, there's a lot of great battings on the market. I've really sold with the Tuscany wool batting. I find that's just like quilting through butter. It's very soft. It's very gentle. I've been using that for several years now, and that's the one that I go to. A lot of quilters like to use a cotton batting, and there's a good products out there. Mountain Mist makes one called Cream Rose that I found to be really nice as well.
And that's a very old kind of bat, the Cream Rose, because I use that one as well. And it's gives you more of an old-fashioned look, do you think?
It does. It does. Yeah. It sure does. And I find that I get a good definition of my quilting stitches when I use that.
Okay. All right. Now, the other thing I want to find out from you is hoops, because I tend to not do very well personally using a hoop. And so I know there are people who use hoops and don't use hoops. How do you approach that? How do you get somebody to figure out what works for them?
Right. I actually started on a frame. When I started quilting, my husband made me a frame. He's a woodworker, so I'm very fortunate in that respect. But I also have several quilt hoops. I have hoops on a stand, hoops off a stand, and all different sizes. And I really find that I get a better quilt stitch when I use a hoop or a frame. I tend to use a hoop more often the older I get, because it's just more comfortable to sit in my easy chair and you know, stretch out and quilt. But a frame works really well. What I've been doing when I teach is I take a frame for quilters to try. I take several different hoops of different sizes. It really is all about experimenting to find out what's comfortable for you, because there is no right or wrong. And I really don't mind what kind of a frame or hoop my students use. I just want them to use something.
Right.
Now, that probably lends itself to a discussion on lap quilting. And I just believe in a frame or a hoop. So
yeah. So you feel this gives a better stitch?
I do.
So how tight is it supposed to be in there? Can you, like, sort of describe what the tightness of the quilt within the hoop or the frame should be?
Well, I don't like it to be too tight in the frame. And what I tell my students is, when you look at your quilt in the hoop or on the frame, it should look like you've had to kick the cat off the frame. It needs to belly out just a little bit, because it's that give that gives you the good stitch. If it's too tight, your needle's going to fight you.
Yeah, and I think people tend to make it too tight, just you know, thinking about that because maybe they've done some sort of other type of embroidery in a hoop, which mm-hmm. tends to be a little tighter. So loosen it up, right? Can you just push it down?
Absolutely.
Plunk the cat
Absolutely.
In the middle?
Yep, there you go.
Now, I know that you told me another really important part that a lot of people don't think about is the backing fabric. Tell me a little bit about mm-hmm. that.
Well, I use all different kinds of backing fabric, from muslin to really beautiful prints by a lot of different manufacturers. Personally, I like my quilt backings to coordinate with the front. And so I prefer a fabric that's wide enough so that I don't have to piece the back. However, mm-hmm. If I find a real fabulous print and it needs to be pieced, then that's what I do. But I know some quilters use a bed sheet mm-hmm. for the back because, you know, there isn't a seam up the middle. I tend to stay away from those because of the texture. And sometimes mm-hmm. the thread count on a sheet isn't consistent. It might not make that much of a difference if I were to, let's say, machine quilt on my home machine. But when you're quilting by hand, you're up close and you're real personal with what you're working on. And mm-hmm. so the thread count makes more of a difference to me anyway.
Yeah, that's
so
a good point.
I also feel like I'm putting a lot of time and money into my quilts, and so I want the back to look as good as the front. So, you know, I'm a sucker for a good print.
Excellent. We have like a minute, Karen, and so I want you to mm-hmm. tell me just real quickly, how do people count number of stitches? Because that's always something people hear or read about for hand mm-hmm. quilting.
Sure. What I learned was that the way to count is by counting the stitches that show on the front. Mm-hmm. And it's usually counted as stitches per inch.
Okay.
But really, I'm not as concerned about the stitch count. My most important thing is that the stitches are even mm-hmm. and that they're uniformly spaced, because there's so many quilt shows out there, and quilters really don't go around with a ruler measuring stitches. But you know when they're even and you know when they're not. So
right.
For me, it's the evenness and the spacing that's important.
Karen, this has been so much fun. Thank you.
It has. Thank you for having me.
We'll be right back.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
Like American Patchwork and Quilting on Facebook for daily quilting inspiration, tips, and giveaways. Find us at facebook.com/APQ Magazine. See our editors share their tips, ideas, and techniques by visiting allpeoplequilt.com and clicking on videos.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. You can visit Karen Mosey at blog.karenmosey.com and find out all her links. Now I've got Vanessa Christensen here of V & Company, and Vanessa has a whole new series on color, which is really exciting, and it's different, and we all need to know about it. So Vanessa is going to share with us about her books and her fabrics that all have to do with one color at a time. Hi, Vanessa.
Hi, Pat. How are you?
I am good. I am just like really excited. I have this stack of really pretty books here, and the top one says red, and then orange,
yes.
and then yellow.
Yes.
Yes, so and then we will also be getting green, blue, and purple next. So very, very exciting.
Very. So how did you come up with this? I mean, what happened that you thought you wanted to create in single color series? I guess that's the best way I can, you know, think about it.
Yeah. Well, before I was a fabric designer, most of my quilts focused on 1 to 4 colors. I generally like to focus on smaller amounts of colors in my quilts, mm-hmm. because I think each color individually is beautiful all on its own. And I also, I have kind of a bit of an art background where, you know, as a young child, I wanted to do sports and I wanted to do kind of more contact sports, and my mom put me in art classes. So I have a lot of, background with painting. And, of course, like the color wheel and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So each color individually has its own story. And a lot of the times, I don't think people understand what draws them to certain colors, mm-hmm. and, you know, and certain things like that. So each color to me has its own beauty, has its own story. And this way, we could focus on each color and basically all the history and the story behind it.
You know, I think that that is really cool because it's different and it's something that we don't really, I think quilters are like, oh, that's pretty. Let's make something with it. But there's more that a lot of us want to learn about a color. So red's my favorite one.
Oh, good. Well, let's start with that.
Yeah. So just tell me a little bit about how the books are laid out, because they have a similar pattern so that when people get them, they're like, okay, I know that's going to have this stuff in it.
Well, each book will have the same layout. Of course, each one focuses on the certain color that you're mm-hmm. looking at. But the idea was that at the end you had a set of 6 books that eventually had the same information for each color that is focused on. And also, you had beautiful pictures and instructions that all went across the board. So in each book, we first start off with the color theory. So like I mentioned, each color has its own emotions and the things that, you know, that we usually associate each color with. For example, red, you have, it's usually associated with intensity or with love. And, you know, orange, energy, or blue, tranquility, you know, those, each one will have that in the beginning. Then, as you flip through the pages, you'll have the color wheel. Like I explained, you know, that you need to learn that in order to know where it is on the color wheel, because later on in the book, after we also talk about tints and shades and tones, because it's not just red. There's tints of red. There's tones and shades of red, and the value. We talk about tint, shade, value, saturation, and then afterwards we talk about color combinations, how red works on the color wheel. For example, you have complementary. What does that mean? Well, we give you examples with pictures of fabric of complementary, split complementary, tetrad, triad, monochromatic. And so this is all prior to the beginning part of the book, and all with pictures, beautiful, beautiful photography. And then afterwards, we have in each book has 4 quilts that focus on that one color, and also 2 to 3 small projects like
pillows,
bags, or pillows, or table runners, and such things like that.
Yeah.
Basically the layout.
Yeah, you know what I really like is that I'm looking at the sort of what red goes with. So like complementary. Mm-hmm. Well, it's got aqua, and red and aqua is so classic, and everybody, you know, you see it a lot. And the reason why is it looks good together.
Because on the color wheel, it's a complementary color. And that's why red and aqua work so well together, and why our eyes are drawn to it, and why that color combination totally works.
Yeah. And I love the picture part of it, because just reading text, you know, my eyes glaze over. You know, it's for me, I like seeing that you've laid out and you have it all in solids, solid fabric. So it's really easy to relate to. Did you do some of the photography? Because you're a beautiful photographer.
Oh, well, thank you. No, I did not do, I did one picture in blue, but Lauren Hunt did all of the photography. But the great thing about Lauren is that she kind of studied a lot of my pictures, a lot of the presentations that I do with my photography, because I love the photography part of the quilting. That's part of my favorite part.
Right.
So she actually studied it and said, okay, I think I have your look down. And she did. She nailed it. And these books represent me, like, photography-wise, I mean, just through and through. She did a fabulous job.
Yeah, she really did. You'll have to tell her that, you know, she nailed it. She really did.
I tell her every single time I see her, hi, I love you, and I love this photography. Thank you.
Did you find when you were writing these, you know, this series and thinking about it, that you surprised yourself in any way? Did something like you went like, oh, wow?
You know, the part where I took for granted a lot my art background, you know, as much as I grudgingly, you know, didn't like the fact that my mom put me in art classes instead of wanting to be in field hockey, you know, I am so grateful now because I think that I understand color a lot, and I just took that for granted for the longest time until I started writing this book series, and I was like, oh my gosh, a lot of people struggle with this, and I just took it for granted that I basically just sort of understood it in the background. But writing about it and talking about it and then, you know, then trying to do quilts that, you know, displayed this idea really surprised me in that there's a huge story that we don't talk about of color and like all of the need for understanding of that one color and how it works and why it works with certain other colors in the color wheel and or shades and those kind of things. And so I think really the surprising part was I was really excited about the project and I had already all these great ideas. But the part that really surprised me was the excitement, much more excitement that I had of all the background on the actual color in each book. And so that's the part that was very surprising to me. That's the part where I've actually fallen more in love with each color as I've, you know, just been able to put it in a book and write about it and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's like giving yourself time to really dive deep and explore something that you're interested in. You had an opportunity.
Right.
Very neat. Now, a lot of what you have in here is based on solids because it's much easier to visualize without multiple colors. But you you did add prints as well, right?
Yeah, there are quite a few projects in the books. I think the red one has more to do with solids, but if you if you look in most of the projects as you go on throughout the books, and even some in the red as well, there's some tone on tone, which can actually sort of, you know, come across as solid. But, you know, a lot of my, even in my fabric lines, I have a lot of tone on tone. And so I tend to kind of gravitate towards solids, like my gradients as well. But there are some pattern fabrics in there because you can't really just, you can, but I wanted to also show quilts and other patterns with pattern fabric as well.
Right, because you're a fabric designer and it's really, I see now, I'm looking at the orange book, Vanessa, and I'm looking at the creamsicle one, which are sort of those orange peel or pumpkin seed or whatever people want to call them, those melon shapes. And a lot of those
are don't tell any of the other projects, but that's my favorite quilt.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, it is totally.
It's so cool. Well, I'm looking at the fabrics that you use, and a lot of those I recognize as your fabric lines.
Yes.
And one of the things there is that your fabric lines, each line itself is sort of practicing what you wrote.
Right.
Did you notice that?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I do.
I think that's so cool.
Before being a fabric designer, I do. I like each color, and I like how tint and shade and tone all really orchestrate together and actually create, you know, even focusing on just one color, it doesn't have to all be just one solid color.
Yeah. Oh, We lost Vanessa there for a second. We're going to see if we can grab her back for a minute. But in her book, she has, like the table runner I'm looking at, there are different shades of orange, which go from deep orange down into sort of a peach. And that's really interesting because it shows how they kind of flow with the color. Another one she has is plaid. So orange – okay, Vanessa, you're back?
I'm back. Yay.
Yay. Okay, we're back for like a minute. okay. So let me ask you before we wrap it up. What's your current fabric line that's on the market that people can find in the stores?
Simply Colorful, the first one, red, orange, and yellow, which go with the books, is available starting in July. And then Simply Colorful 2, which is the green, blue, and purple, will be available starting in the fall.
Okay, and so these are fabric lines that you basically took the same concept as the book and took just a certain set, and they're all very, very similar look. So, okay, so everybody needs to visit Vanessa at VanessaChristensen.com and find her books, which your publisher is Lucky Spool.
Lucky Spool, yes.
And they're just gorgeous. Vanessa, this has been so much fun.
Thank you. It's so lovely to talk to you always.
Always, always. And I appreciate your time. We're going to be right back after the break.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg. Join me in 2015 for a brand new video series called Show Me How, brought to you by Baby Lock. Each month, I'll show you how to complete a simple project from start to finish, learn new techniques, see tips, and sew a great project. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/videos to watch.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and we're going to spend this second half of the show talking to Mandy Lyons, and you have probably read her articles on her website. You have maybe taken her Craftsy class. You may have been lucky enough to see her quilts hanging in a show and maybe worked with her, you know, in person, and I get to talk to her for a full half hour about all kinds of quilting things. And she has a new book, and we're going to hear about that too. So hi, Mandy. How are you?
Hi, Pat. I'm doing well. Thanks.
Okay, so first of all, I have to be able to congratulate you personally on your quilt that was just given a big, big ribbon, and it's the one that I showed on my website with your picture called Eggs and Darts. Were you surprised?
I was, you know, I saw it in a photograph on Krista Watson's Instagram feed.
Yeah.
And, and so for me, it was a complete surprise. And, my husband actually thought our cat downstairs was having some kind of attack and came looking to make sure everything was okay. But, it was a big surprise, but thank you very much.
And so your quilt won first place in the modern category at the NQA show,
That's right.
Which is very big deal.
yeah, it was definitely a real surprise. You know, when I had entered it, I was really looking for, you know, critique and comments so that I can, I'm always looking to do things better the next time. And so I was really hoping for some good comments. It was a complete surprise. But I'm really happy about it. So that was really nice.
Yeah. It's a, it makes your month, right? To, there you go. Tell me a little bit. Let's do a backstory because we have a little bit of time to spend together. How did you get into quilt making?
Well, you know, it was about 13 years ago now. I was out visiting my grandparents, and in my family, my immediate family had made quilts, but we have family quilts on both sides of the family that people had slept under, and. But when I went back to visit my grandparents, my grandma had this 1947 Singer in-cabinet sewing machine. And back in the 60s and 70s, all my parents had used it, my aunts and uncles had used it, because in California, at that point, there was no REI, there was no, you know, outdoor gear. But there was a right away, and they send you the ripstop material, and they send you these bags of down, and you can make your own outdoor gear. So everybody had made, like, sleeping bags and all sorts of stuff. And I wanted to be, I'm like, well, everybody else has made something on this. I want to make something, too. And, you know, my grandmother took me down to the quilt store, and we picked some things out. And I came back with my little mat and rotary cutter and, you know, no notion of a quarter-inch seam allowance, and, you know, cut things out on the coffee table and, you know, sewed them up on this machine. And ever since then, I've been totally hooked. So, you know, and kind of see it as continuing the legacy, even though maybe having skipped a generation. So, yeah.
I think that that's pretty fun, though, that your whole mindset was that, well, you wanted to make something with the same machine that everybody else has, you know, it'd be part of it and continue the legacy, kind of. That's neat.
Yeah, it was really nice. So,
you know, one of the other.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, one of the other parts that I read about you and your background that I think might tie into, it does tie into it because you talk about it in your book as well, is that you have a very large love for archaeology. You know, have you sort of thought about how that plays into that history part? I mean, there all of a sudden it's like, well, you wanted to use the machine. Well, that's history, right?
Yeah, you know, I was getting a PhD in classical archaeology, you know, where you actually went out and excavated in various places. And one of the reasons that I really loved archaeology in general was just that I see us as kind of all existing in this human experience, you know, and so it's really, for me, you know, excavating was kind of finding these connections with the people who have come before us, whether, you know, it's somebody from our own immediate culture or, you know, other cultures. We're all still human beings, and I really, it was a profoundly moving experience to be, you know, excavating these pots that people had made with their hands and seeing the things that they cared about and made and loved and used and, you know, the lives that they had. So, yeah, so for me, like, I feel like what I'm doing as a quilter is making an object that kind of goes off and exists on its own. It becomes its own thing, you know, and it's going to have its own story separate from me, and I really like that idea. But I also think it's pretty funny because all the stuff I excavated, the textiles never survive, you know, and some of the things that never make it. So I kind of think about that as I'm sewing these quilts, you know. I know they have a lifespan, but it's not going to be something like, you know, pottery, which, you know, lasts forever. So I kind of like that, you know. I was kind of like that impermanence, I guess.
Yes. you know, the one of the things is when I look at – I love antique quilts, and I like to think about who made them, you know, not just looking at them, but I want to know, like, who mm-hmm. made it and why did they make it? What was their story? And, you know, you're making a quilt now. I was just thinking when you were saying that, I thought, oh, you know, like your quilt that just won the award. Well, you know, 80, 90, 100 years from now, somebody might find that and – maybe the label got removed for some reason, and all of a sudden they're looking at that going, I wonder what she was thinking when she made that. It's like, you know,
it really, these quilts are, they have so much personality of their own, mm-hmm. you know, and it's the quilt itself, but then it's like, who made this? Who spent the time putting those stitches in? Mm-hmm. And what did it, what was she thinking? Was
right.
she bored? Was she talking to somebody? You know, because it's, you know, how does that fit in? I mean, I really love how quilting kind of gets into your imagination and you, mm-hmm. you kind of can't stop thinking about it.
So the quilts you make now, are they a lot different than what you started making, you know, 12 years ago?
They kind of are, but at the beginning I, you know, started off with more traditional patterns and, you know, and then after a while I realized that what I wanted to make and what the patterns were that I was seeing didn't really exist. And so I mm-hmm. started branching off and, you know, doing my own things. But it's still kind of inspired by these classical ideas that I'd studied, you know, proportion mm-hmm. and balance and color and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, for me, it was funny because even as I was looking through these traditional patterns, I couldn't help but see that, you know, these patterns had been around for thousands of years, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
When I was excavating, there were flying geese everywhere, you know, in pottery and in the floors, and you know that triangle shape is, mm-hmm. you know, it was there. Drunkard's Path was there. You mm-hmm. know, all you have to do is look at Roman mosaics and see so many things that we use or we consider traditional patterns today. And it was just really nice to kind of explore all of those things. And be able to kind of tie them all together, I think. So,
well, your quilt that we'll just keep talking about, the one that won the award, because that's the most fun to talk about at the moment. It's called Inks and Darts. And is that going to be in your book? Did I remember you told me that?
Yeah, it is. It's one of the projects in my book. It's an appliqué technique, and it's a Sharon Chambert appliqué technique, and I had gotten permission to use it for the book. And it's for me, it was really fun because so exciting to talk about it. I can't get my words out. It has, you know, I talk about balance and proportion and scale. I talk about these bright colors, and I chose those colors really deliberately because one of the things that a lot of people don't know about, especially, you know, Greek temple architecture, was that, you know, we think of these ancient monuments and we see them as these beautiful, pristine white buildings. But in fact, they were painted these really bright, bold colors, you know, ochres and blues and yellows and greens. And so it would have looked entirely different.
Yeah.
They had glass that they had stuck in the columns so they'd glitter in the sunlight. So when I picked the colors for these quilts, I really wanted to, you know, use bright, bold colors. Mm-hmm. And I also wanted to bring in a modern element of design where you take something very small and you play with its scale. You make it super big, or you take something mm-hmm. really big and you make it super small, you know, which is a kind of a, you know, common modern theme for modern art. That and so I wanted to be able to do something like that with my quilt and have all of these things together.
Yeah, the scale is just is exciting for me because I like things supersized. You know, if that's just where my mind goes and what excites me when I look at things. I'm in awe of little things, but I get excited when they're oversized. I'm like, oh, look at that statement. You know, it's just that just has my visual appeal, my aesthetic. But I like that. that this your design is, it's just gorgeous. Everybody's going to have to go and see it because it's so much fun. Okay, so let's talk to about some of the quilting aspect, because another big part of who you are, Mandy, is your machine quilting skills. You quilt for others. Do you still quilt for others?
Yeah, I do. I do. I have, you know, two young kids at home, so I quilt on a part-time basis for other people. Mm-hmm. It's funny, a couple of years ago I told my husband, I said, you know, I really feel like I have a lot to say. I feel like I really want to, you know, try and make this quilting thing work. And he said, well, what do you think it would take? And I said, well, I don't know, you know. It's so hard to finish all these quilts that I have in my head. Some of them were really big designs in my head. And and he said, well, you know, have you ever thought about a long arm? And so I blame of this on him. He was the one who said, you know, well, why don't you look for a long arm and see what that is all about? And I just, it really clicked, you know, this being able to see the whole thing at once and being able to see the top and the design and, you know, be able to kind of add another layer of beautiful design onto an already beautiful top, you know, and I just really love the whole thing. And but yeah, it's been really great, and it allowed me to do a lot of things that I might not have been able to do otherwise, like write a book in a few months, you know, finishing these quilts. So, it's definitely a significant part now of what I do. So
right, yeah, and I think some people probably know you don't realize that there's actually you have a lot of things going on. So I'm really excited to have you here to share that, because you know, it's not just that you do machine quilting. That's just one part of Mandy. But I do like that you have a lot of tips and techniques that are focused on sort of the machine quilting part of it, that people can go look at your site. So I need them to go out there at mandalei.com. So that's the website. Mm-hmm. What do you do? I thought this would give people a little info on how do you approach the design layer of the quilting, because you have the top, and then how do you tell people to approach what will they quilt? Because that's the biggest question. I think I'm sure everybody hears this. I don't know what to quilt. I don't know what to put all the layers together. Oh, I just also just got a note that we have like 20 seconds till the break.
Oh, okay.
So why don't we do
that? Do you want me to think about that? And we can
let's do that when we come back, okay? Because I just
sounds good.
I wasn't paying attention. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, Mandy is going to tell us a little bit about how to design your quilting.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg, executive editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making pillowcases and creating smiles. For people who love to sew or quilt, it's so easy to lift spirits and bring smiles to hospitalized kids, homeless families, and others in need. Simply join American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. Make one, two, or more pillowcases and donate them in your local community. You'll create just as many smiles. Join the movement today. Find complete details, download free patterns, and record your donations online at allpeoplequilt.com/million pillowcases.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I have Mandy Lyons of Mandalay.com website. So, Mandy, I always think of like the quilting is like a whole nother design element, or it can be. It doesn't have to be, but it can be. How do you approach knowing what to quilt?
Well, you know, it starts off, you know, for me at least, I look at, you know, what kind of blocks do I have? Do they work together? Are they separated by sashing? I mean, sashing kind of is the beginning for me. If it has sashing, then it's, you know, little individual things that are set apart. But if the blocks work, you know, kind of more as a whole, then I start thinking about pulling out some of the designs possibly from the fabric or from the blocks themselves and kind of incorporating them so that they're going to have some kind of harmony with the top. You know, I don't necessarily want to do something that's the first thing that comes to my head. Mm-hmm. And that's actually my friend Lisa Kaye was like, I never do the first thing that comes to my head because everybody thinks of that. And yeah. I thought that was a great, and I've thought about that ever since. But really what I'm trying to do with my quilting is to create, I guess it's kind of, I think of it like a painting. It's like another mm-hmm. layer on top of it that mm-hmm. enhances it, but which doesn't, you know, stand alone. So if there's a story that it has to tell, you know, like for this one quilt, I had this, it was a band of stars and it was set on the top of the quilt and the stars were very, you know, they were very structured. Mm-hmm. These 4-point stars. But it was like, you know, stars are on this journey and they're moving. And so you kind of break them out. And so the first few stars I quilted on either side of the band were, you know, structured. They were still mm-hmm. straight and they were still, you know, perfectly 90 degree. And then they started moving a little bit so that they broke out and there was some movement to the quilt. I really like thinking about how to make a quilt where your eye travels from one section to the next, because then you're actually engaged with it. So for that, I tend to look at the fabric. I tend to look, you know, for design elements that I can pull in. And usually every quilter has something special about a quilt that they really like. Mm-hmm. From a professional standpoint, that what I ask people, I don't really ask them what they want. I ask them mm-hmm. what they don't want.
Right, right.
Because that to me tells me more of like, you know, some people are like, don't do swirls right. or don't right. do feathers or don't do.
Right.
But other than that, I really look to the quilt top to, you know, see, you know, there's always something that'll stand out that I will build on.
And for
clear.
Yes. Yeah. For those of you who want to learn more about Mandy's, you know, she does the crafty class on some of her techniques. So that's a great place to learn a bit more on that. Cause I would just like to come and sit with you for a week. Is that okay? That's like,
of course. Come on over anytime.
All right. So we're going to switch gears and let's talk about your book. Your book is called Wonderlust Quilts, 10 Modern Projects Inspired by Classic Art and Architecture. So we've set the stage so people know that you have this a deep passion for architecture and archaeology and history. When you were planning your book, what was your goal for it?
Well, I had a couple of goals. One, I wanted, it kind of goes back to the beginning of when I was quilting. When I first started, it was kind of the beginning of the blogging era. You know, 13 mm-hmm. years ago, people were just starting to get their blogs, get out there, write these things. The modern quilting style was just picking up, and people were writing about it and sharing their things online. And I just thought that was amazing and was, you know, really excited by that. Mm-hmm. And so when I... But at the same time, there's a little pushback from, you know, quilters who had, you know, different expectations of what quilts were. You know, you use the traditional mm-hmm. patterns and those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And so really what I wanted to show with the book was that, well, these patterns, you know, we are, as humans, all speak a language of pattern, like that mm-hmm. that we have picked up from the natural world around us. So really, you know, it's kind of a... It's not a debate that's really important because we're all making these things and that's what's really important is that we as human beings, we create things, we're artists. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to make a book that encouraged people to kind of explore that. And also it's a skill builder. You know, as I go through the book, I show how to do a few more advanced techniques, why seam set and seams, a different kind of applique, using, you know, scale and proportion, how to take a photograph and turn it into a quilt using an ancient method that the Egyptians used.
Scanning the book. Where is that one? That's like
that one is a Pantheon one. It's the wall hanging. Okay. And it was the way the Egyptians made their giant sculptures was that they would draw out a grid, and so they'd have a little picture with a grid over the top of it, and they would refer to that, and then they'd carve each grid and have the points set up on this big grid in front of them so that they would just blow it up a little bit. So they worked in sections, and it's really easy to do that with a quilt pot. I mean, well, it's easy to draw the grid, but, you know, but you can do this yourself. So I want quilters to be able to find their own voice and also build these skills that allow them to make what's in their head, you know, to perhaps expand a little bit in their quilting life. I think it actually does pretty well at that. I'm really actually pretty proud of how that turned out. So
I really liked reading through it. The descriptions and sort of the story that goes with everything, and then how you kind of made all the connections through to making the quilt. Like I was looking at the temple steps, which I think is. You look at the quilt, it's like, oh, you know, it's a cool quilt. It's got a really nice aesthetic. But then to figure out and learn why you did it and what was behind it with the pictures of the temple, that's the part that's like, you know, you just make a connection then. Did you feel that when you were making the book?
I did. I went through and tried to think of things that, you know, I tried to pick things that, you know, a lot of people would have some kind of resonance with. You know, the cobblestones that are still around today that are, you know, still in use. The temple steps that, you know, tourists walk up. And, you know, a lot of these things are still there. So you can experience them firsthand, and then you can kind of make your own version of it. You know, take that as your inspiration. And it was it was really great for me. It was really special.
Yeah, another one that I like, because I think so many quilters could relate to it, was your lovely fishborn, and I may not be pronouncing that right.
No, that's correct.
Yeah, where it's the tiles, and then you interpreted what you saw in the quilt. So, I mean, so many quilters will take photos of tile floors, tiles in the bathroom, tiles in the ceiling, you know, the backsplash. I mean, we see quilts when we see tiles, and I like that this connected, but then you took it to your creative level with it.
It's unusual. It's actually a floor that from the first century AD that actually almost entirely survived, which you don't see all the time. But when I looked at it, I really saw these quilt blocks. And while the original tile floor wasn't exactly a quilt block, I went ahead and took the nearest quilt block I could find and put it in place. And it was just lovely to work on. And I did want to say one of the things that I really love about my book is how you know, I had so many people help me on this book. And, you know, I live in a place that's we're hundreds of miles away from our family, both of us. And we have, you know, kind of a small community locally of quilters or people that I can quilt with. But, you know, I have so many quilting friends from everywhere because of, you know, social media and being online and blogs and all the rest of it. And this book was just, to me, it's like the best part about quilting, because it was like a quilting bee. I had all of these friends helping me and work with it. And so I look at this book and I just, you know, it makes me so happy because it's the quilting community at its best, you know, yeah. Everybody, you know, contributing and joyfully. It was wonderful. It was really wonderful. So thanks, everybody. I love you.
There you go. There you go. I know it takes a village, that's for sure, to do these things, because you yeah. always need to have some support in some form or another from your friends and your family. When you were doing this, Mandy, was there like one thing that sort of either surprised you about yourself, or you were like, oh, wow, you know, that was harder than I thought or easier than I thought? Kind of one of those moments?
You know, it was, when I did this proposal and I wrote it, I'm like, you know, this could be a really special book, you know. And then when it was done and I saw the amazing photography that they did and, you know, the staging that they had done and everything, I think it was just everything clicked, everything worked together. And I just was so overwhelmed with, like, you know, that this actually came out, even better than I had hoped. And, you know, working with C&T on that was really great. And everybody was just, you know, we talked everything out, and it was really good. And, you know, every time I see a new version of it, I start crying. So,
oh.
And I'm not a person who cries. So my husband's like, oh yeah, did you get another delivery today?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh,
look at that. It's so good. So I just hope that it's inspiring to other people the way that it kind of, even working on it myself, it inspired me to do things that were even though I knew these techniques were still mm-hmm. outside of my comfort zone, and to work harder and to try a little bit more different, you know, to do better, and to just enjoy the whole process, you know, that was the best part, was I enjoyed every bit of it, even the
every stitch, every edit,
every stitch. Yep.
Every edit of the book, every email back. Yes.
Well, maybe not that so much.
Right. Put that comma in. Yes, it's okay.
All right.
I want to wrap it up just to be sure that people know where to visit you. I'm going to entice them to visit you by telling them that they must visit your Bear All Studio remodel or cleanup or whatever you want to call it.
Yep. I definitely swallowed my pride on that one. But you know what? I did it because I don't think I'm alone. And that was one of the things, you know, that picture is actually after the end. I wrote this book in 4.5 months, I think. It was the end of a lot of trial and error on one of the quilts, and but I just wanted people to see, you know, that yes. That you know you can pull through.
Well, Mandy, visit Mandy's and see her May 13th, 2015 studio cleanup. It is well worth visiting and staying with Mandy. So this has been so much fun. I'm glad you were here.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much. And it was lovely to chat.
Yeah. Visit Mandy at Mandalay.com. This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. You can visit me at PatSloan.com. Check out our Facebook groups. When you come to our sites, we have links. See you next week.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques.